Hey, everybody. My name is Damara West, and I'm founder of Be Well, Beautiful Woman, where we help women to center their healing and liberation so that they can lead and live on their own terms. I'm ecstatic to welcome you into the Abundance Summit, which is all about amplifying your power to draw in more money, more joy, and more ease. And who I've got in the lineup right now is Caitlin Caddy. She's a certified yoga and meditation teacher and has been called a well-being whiz by Australian Yoga Journal. And her positive perspectives and relatable, playful approach have inspired people across the globe to get lit up and live to their full potential. After a decade-long battle with chronic Lyme disease, compounded by years of depression, anxiety, perfectionism, overachievement, and disorder eating, Caitlin turned to meditation as a last resort, desperate to heal herself. As it turned out, meditation was the medicine to set her on a path to holistic wellness, happiness, and freedom from Lyme disease. That set Caitlin on a mission to make meditation more accessible and inspired her first book, Heavily Meditated, Your Down-to-Earth Guide to Learning Meditation and Getting High on Life, which was published in 2020 by Hardy Grant Books. Vogue Australia named it the coolest book on meditation, and Better Homes and Gardens called it life-changing. Caitlin followed up the book with the launch of Heavily Meditated app and a guided meditation app. Her second book, The Hope Dealer, 101 Soulful Daily Musings, was published by Hay House in July of 2023 and is packed with inspiration on overcoming self-doubt, perfectionism, and limiting beliefs while building self-trust, integrity, resilience, courage, and confidence. Caitlin's work has been featured in the pages of Maria Claire, Real Living, Prevention, Nourished, and Women's Health, and on the websites of Vogue, The Grace Tales, and Fashion Journal. American by birth, Caitlin now lives with her husband and three beautiful children on Budanjalung Country, Byron Bay, Australia. Caitlin, did I pronounce that correctly?
Bunjalung.
Okay, wonderful. So thank you so much for that. And Caitlin, I'm really, really glad that you're here today. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be spending some time with you and your community.
Absolutely. So we're going to dive right in. I love that you've been coined the well-being whiz. Talk to us about that journey to getting there.
Well, thank you for a very generous intro. I think that sort of covers the broad strokes of it. But yeah, I had Lyme disease and an eating disorder and dengue fever and mononucleosis. And but that was all before I was 21. So pretty broken and depleted on pretty much every level. So really my journey towards wellness was, I think, because I was stubborn, honestly. You know, I'm not going to take this sort of life sentence of a chronic illness. Just was determined to figure out how to be well. So it started with doing Chinese medicine and homeopathy and naturopathy and vitamin IVs and, you know, you name it, I tried it. And it did help, but the Lyme disease just kept resurfacing. And so it became clear that I was missing a piece of the puzzle. So I felt really frustrated and deflated. But the last thing on and the thing I really didn't want to try was to meditate. So I was just absolutely terrified of getting still, because like most of us growing up in the culture that we grew up in, you know, I really derived my sense of happiness, self-worth through what I could control and what I could achieve. I think we are conditioned to be little like productivity ninjas. So for me, that idea of actually doing nothing, which is what I thought meditation was terrifying, because if you don't, if you're not out there hustling, who even are you? Mm. And so, you know, it was really my last resort. Trying meditation was my last resort, but as it turned out, it was the piece of the puzzle that helped me become free of Lyme disease. So I've been free of Lyme disease for over a decade now. And I really credit meditation with helping me kind of find that last piece that I needed. And the reason why was because it gave my nervous system a chance to sort of find parasympathetic dominance. So most of us are in fight or flight all the time, that sympathetic dominance. And when I was able to shift more regularly into that parasympathetic or that rest, digest, repair, reproduce aspect of the nervous system, then my body could actually heal. My immune system could do what it needed to do. But it was incredibly challenging and confronting. And I had to really kind of let go of who I thought I was in order to heal. So that's the sort of long and short of it. And once I got to that point, I was just became very passionate about helping people learn to meditate also, because it really was life-changing for me.
Wow. You know, so the very thing that you were running from was the very thing that really changed your life. And so that's super powerful for us to ponder. And just the thought that meditation is credited with healing your Lyme disease, I'm sure that the listeners are, many of them are blown away by that, right? And yet, you know, you're not the only one who's utilized a meditation or a healing practice or, you know, plant-based diet, all these ways that we can really tap in to the body's ability to heal itself. So you struck a gold mine, right? And how beautiful that is, that now you're on a mission to ensure that meditation gets in the hands of the masses. So at what point in time did you know that everyone needed to know about meditation and needed to be able to access it, and that you needed to debunk some of the negative thinking that people have about meditation? So when did you know that, and talk to us about that process?
Well, it's funny because when you said the thing you, I think you said the thing that you were kind of like resisting was the thing that ended up healing you. And I think that that is, I just want to pull that thread because I now see resistance as a good sign, not a stop sign, because of that experience and so many other experiences in life where I'm like, if I feel myself resisting something, I now know like, oh, lady, that is a green light. Go full steam ahead, because resistance tells you it's keeping you safe, but it's really keeping you small. Yeah. And so often the thing that we resist is actually pathway towards some sense of agency or liberation, I find. And so meditation was something I really resisted, but also even teaching meditation was something I resisted. I was like, who am I to do this? On the one hand, I was like, y'all need to try this. But also, it's too hard to learn how to do it. And there's too many barriers to entry, and it's expensive or it's confusing. So on the one hand, I wanted to solve that problem. But on the other hand, I really resisted stepping into that role of a guide to people. And yet again, I just had to look that resistance in the eye and go, who am I not to offer this? If I could be of service to people, I've found a way to do it. I've kind of, you know, cracked a code in terms of just creating a really simple system and a toolkit that people can, I think, easily follow and integrate into their lives. And so for me, it was just going, I can sit here and wrestle with my self-doubt, or I can be of service. I can stop judging my gifts or my abilities or what I've created and just offer it and with humility. And if it's of service to people, that's amazing. So I really did resist it. And thank you for asking that question, because we don't always get to talk about the sort of behind the scenes of like how we came into where we are. And I think it's so important to know that, like, yeah, it looks like we've achieved some notoriety, or that we, you know, we have some credentials now, but it's like, there's always a pathway of self-doubt. There's always a dance with that, I think, on the way there.
There's so much that I want to say about that. And, you know, just backtracking slightly, I love that you circle back to resistance. And, you know, one of our life tasks is to figure out the difference between when we're saying no to something because it's really not in alignment versus the toiling that can happen when we're feeling drawn to do something and fear, right, is crippling us from taking that leap. And you illustrated it just by saying, like, who am I to do this? And it's like, well, who am I not to do this, right? I'm being called to do this. And the reality is that only you can do it in the way that you've done it, right? I mean, just this drive that you have to bring meditation to the masses and remove barriers and make it light and fun and bite-sized is something that is a part of your individualized pathway, right? And
Exactly.
You know, I think that the invitation always is to walk through the door when we feel led to walk through it. We don't have to know all the reasons why. There's no way that you could have known that meditation was going to be the thing that helped you to be free of Lyme disease for 10 years and the thing that would start a movement to bring meditation to the masses, right? And yet it was the thing that was calling you. And so I think it's just so critically important that we say yes to the calling when it manifests, and we don't have to be clear about all of the reasons, right? And we can do it afraid. And, you know, the school of thought sometimes, and I've been resisting against it, that fear and certainty or fear and faith can exist in the same space. They absolutely can exist in the same space. You can know that you're supposed to do something, that it's going to work out, and also be scared as shit to meander through it, right? To walk through the door that you've never walked through. And so much of what you're saying, Caitlin, resonates with the mission of Be Well, Beautiful Woman, which is about not just, you know, when we think about accessibility, it is about financial success, accessibility, but it's also about, you know, connecting to practices that allow us to really take power of our own healing, practices that are going to ignite us, both short-term, long-term practices that far exceed, no diss against the medical model, but far exceed what oftentimes the medical model can do for us, right? And so, I know I remember, and I'm formally trained in meditation, and you know, I'm a yoga teacher, et cetera. And when I first went down these pathways, I did it for me first, right? I did it for me because I was looking to be liberated. I was looking to be healed. And now those very things are being offered to the community in ways to support their healing. And so we've always got to channel, what I'll say lastly, quickly, before I turn it back over to you, is the light within ourselves, so that then we can alchemize that light for the good of the world, right? In whatever way we're being called to utilize that light.
Yeah, beautifully said. Beautifully said. I think the idea of becoming a teacher of something or a guide, it has with an embodied experience yourself. And so being, you know, reaching for something first because you need it, and then having really marinating in it and really exploring it, I think is so critical. And I think we often kind of people skip ahead of that, but it's like, you've got to do the work in yourself first, I think, before you can then offer it to people in a meaningful way. So I think so important. And also, I just wanted to say that, you know, this idea of like dancing with self-doubt, like sort of like fear and courage. And I think courage is practice, right? Yeah. It's not just the state that we're sort of holding at any one point, a practice of showing up with your heart forward over and over and over again. And having, I think that courageousness and that courageous spirit coupled with curiosity and self-compassion is like the trinity, right? Because you've got the courage to just go, I'm just going to give it a go. And then you've got the curiosity of like, let me see where my inner guidance system is going to lead me, explore things. And not every single thing I pick up is going to be the right fit for me, but let me be open-minded and curious and follow those paths. And then this idea of like iterating, you need to be self-compassionate to be able to go, oh, mess that up. Or that wasn't for me, or I could do that better next time or whatever. And you've got to be able to forgive yourself and keep showing up and just be playful about it, I think. So I just wanted to offer that because I think what you were saying was just so spot on.
And that was really beautifully said. And I love that. I mean, you didn't say the Holy Trinity, but I'm going to just put holy in front of Trinity that you've given us this framework. And, you know, just to think about courage as a practice, right? Because none of us is ever absent of fear 100% of the time, right? There are times when we really feel powerful and there are times that we don't. And when we really have to tap in to that practice of courage, as you have so eloquently described. So, you know, on par with what we've highlighted about you, your drive to bring meditation to the masses, and, you know, really being hailed by Vogue Australia, for writing the coolest book on meditation, right? That's amazing to have that be said about your work, right? Not just for the sake of saying it, but for the sake of course, the spirit of accessibility. So, you know, what more can we do for those healers out there that are listening right now to ensure access to all healing modalities like meditation, and to do it in ways that are accessible in every single way possible, right? And we've talked about some of those ways from a financial standpoint, the dosage by which we practice, et cetera. So how can we really keep accessibility at the forefront to ensure that we are spreading the light in the way that we've been designed to, essentially?
Yeah, I love this question so much. I think it's such an important topic to discuss, because at the moment, it seems like so much of what offer in the sort of personal development or wellness world is really suited to people in a position of privilege, right? There's gatekeepers and there's power hoarders, and creates a sort of dynamic of hierarchical power and exclusivity. And that's because it's profitable to do it that way, right? And so I think it's really important to sort of dismantle that and take it apart and understand what's at play there, because these practices that I study and teach are all about empowering the individual. So I think for me, I want to give power back to the practitioner, right? I want to strip away the power dynamics and the hierarchy that we so often see. And just to give an example of that, what I mean is, like, you know, if I had somebody interview me the other day, and it was a live audience, and someone in the audience asked, how long does it take to learn how to meditate? And the interviewer jumped in and was like, oh, I do Vedic meditation. You can course, or, you know, for a whole weekend, or you can do it over a month, or da da da. She sort of like offered that, which is a valid option. But I was like, that's not how I would have answered the question, because you have to have the money to pay $1,000 or more usually to be initiated into these practices, and you got to have time. And both of those things are not something that everyone has, or maybe they're just not in the season of life where they've been able to have one or both of those things, or because of, you know, the systems that are at play in the world. So I think for me, I just want to give that as like a concrete example. I don't think you should have to pay $1,000 to learn how to meditate. And I don't think you should have to do it twice a day for 20 minutes a day, because I just don't think that's everyone's reality. And so when I say give power back to the practitioner, the purpose of these tools is agency, right? So it's self-motivated, self-directed, self-guided. It's empowering you to make choices and act on choices in ways that can make a difference in your life, right? So these are tools for everyone. And not only that, it's not just about like, understand it as you're doing, right? Here's the technique I understand how to do. It's all having the agency to go, I'm going to be devoted but flexible. And so for me as a working mom, sometimes my practice fluctuates. I show up every day, but it looks different from day to day because of the season of life that I'm in, right? And I know that that's okay, because like I'm the boss of my practice, right? Like, I'm not looking for extra validation. So it's really about self-care. We think of it as being this sort of selfish, I think we've been trained to think of it as being selfish, but what if we think about it as being self-guided, self-led, self-directed, right? Mm-hmm. And so that if you're feeling a certain way in your life, like maybe you're feeling a sense of stuckness or you're stagnant, or you have a sense of self-doubt, there's a practice for that. And when you know what the toolkit is, you can reach for those practices and sort of dose yourself. So I think like demystifying things is a big part of making it accessible, and also just making it adaptable to your life and your circumstances. Obviously, like, I'm very jazzed about that topic.
Oh my gosh. So let me tell you, I was over here restraining myself, right? Because of course I wanted you to have adequate space to respond, and you're speaking like my language. I think that it's a form of any type of rigidity that we have on practice. And I'm trained in a ton of things, from Reiki to emotional freedom techniques, to yoga, to meditation, to breath work. And I have a lot of things in my toolbox, right, that I can utilize when it's right for me. And sometimes I might have time to get on my mat for an hour. And sometimes I might have time to get on my mat for 10 minutes, right? And I relish in that 10 minutes, just like I'm going to relish in that hour practice. And it reminds me of something in the Four Agreements where, you know, the student says, well, teacher, if I meditate longer, right, if I meditate twice the amount of time, when will I get to enlightenment? Well, it's going to take you twice the amount of time to get to enlightenment, because life is meant to be lived, right? And we're meant to have things that we can access when we need them to build our resiliency so that we can be well, so that we can be proactive and reactive at times, so that we're pouring from our overflow, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. Or healing our bodies from Lyme disease, or healing our emotions from having a mental health issue like depression, whatever that is. These things are available. They're our medicine, essentially, right? And how dare us, and particularly because we're talking about abundance, say, you have to do it this way. No, I know what's best mm-hmm. for me. And thankfully, mm-hmm. I have tons of choices for me to invest in my well-being. And part of knowing thyself is knowing what I need in any given time to be well, to be my most creative self, to be my most energetic self, et cetera, et cetera. So we could, if we had more time, Caitlin, we could have a whole day talking about this topic. Because every space I'm in, that's the school of thought, right? You have to practice every day. And if you don't practice every day, you can't call yourself. It's like, well, who said? Who said it? Yeah. I don't want to minimize the people that have come before me, the folks who have studied deep in certain bodies of work, schools of thought,
lineages, or
I don't want to minimize that. I don't. And I said what I said. Life is meant to be lived, and
own it. Yeah.
So,
well, anyway. I think that's what. So, to the tradition that I study in is the Himalayan tradition, and what I love about it is that it's for householders, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a monastic. It's not just a monastic sort of tradition, right? It's like for people who houses and jobs and kids. And I love that it's so prescriptive, and that there's different tools for different purposes. And I think that's the other thing, is like a lot of these sort of top-down systems where they're like, you can be initiated and you can pay $1,000 and we'll give you a secret mantra. I'm like, you know, those mantras are not secret. Everybody knows them. Right. Just
well,
saying.
And thank you. And even though clearly people have made a lot of money, right? I mean, the wellness space is a $1 trillion industry, right? And and there's nothing wrong with profiting from the light that we're sharing with the world, right? And I think to put a price tag on everything, right? I think we're meant to give things away. And so we've got to know, when are the times that I'm supposed to give it away, and when are the times that I'm supposed to charge, right? Because I don't think that, and again, thinking about the principles of abundance, you give it away as often as you can. You're keeping money flowing, and which in part is keep your gifts as a part of that flow, right? So again, I'm sure that we could both talk about this forever, but we don't have time, right? So we might have to have a part two, who knows? All right, so the next thing I want to explore with you is your recent book called The Hope Dealer was released earlier this year, as we talked about. I love, love, love this title. Talk to us about the top 5 strategies that you have for cultivating more hope in our lives.
Well, let's start with the word hope itself, right? Mm-hmm. So hope, one of the origins of that word is from the old English hopa, which means confidence in the future. Mm-hmm. So if we're thinking about hope, the themes that are present in the book are about cultivating that, right? And so what are the things that we can do to feel more confident about the future and about our future? So I think the first one I would say is let go of self-doubt and build self-trust, right? And so, I mean, pretty much the actionable item for all of these is Meditate. Mm-hmm. So we'll just sort of say that. But number two would be to build capacity for meeting life as it is, right? So like building a sense of equanimity so that you can hold what happens, because life's not all butterflies and rainbows. It's challenging. And one of the gifts of these practices, and I think the way that these practices can us feel hopeful even when life is challenging, is that we have a greater capacity for meeting life as it is. Number three would be ditch perfectionism, because that is just like a living misery. Just let it go. Like, let that be a practice of just self-compassion, self-forgiveness, and watch the freedom that unfolds from that and how much more hopeful you feel about your future.
Yes.
Building confidence. So through courage and self-compassion, we've kind of touched on that earlier, that dynamic of showing up and being brave, and also, you know, giving yourself the compassion to get it wrong and experiment and sort of let it be an experiment. And then there's, I feel like I'm struggling between the fifth one, because on the one hand, I want to say feed yourself a diet of inspiration, right? So just make sure that your inputs are uplifting and that you're not just consuming negativity. You've got to give yourself some soul food. I'm not saying look away from what's happening in the world. You need to be informed and take action in ways that are aligned, but also you need do that, read poetry or drink your tea in the sunshine or listen to music that makes you feel alive. Whatever it is, you've got to feed yourself a diet of inspiration. But the last one, I'm adding six and the rules, it's what I do. Sorry.
I love that. Rest. I'm a rule breaker too. Break all of the rules, KK. Okay.
That's why I feel we're kindred spirits. So rest is like the ultimate rebellion. Mm. And I can tell you that when you build a rest practice into your life, you will feel so much more confident and hopeful about the future, because you will step out of the momentum and the speed and the intensity and reactivity of the world as it's currently operating, and tune back into your wholeness and your worthiness and your wisdom, and move from that place. And when you're connected to those things, you can't help but feel hopeful. So what I mean by rest specifically, for me, I think yoga nidra is a game changer. If you're not familiar with it, it's an amazing practice from the yoga tradition of surrender. So where meditation is about focus, yoga nidra is about sort of surrender and reaching this state where we're not waking, not sleeping, not dreaming. So it's this sort of fourth state. But in a practical way, you lay down, you can be guided, or you can learn to guide yourself, and you just have a little bit of a rest. And it is so transformational. But I think women, and I think particularly women of color, need to rest. It's so much emotional labor happening, and so much stigma and inherited beliefs about it not being safe to rest. It really is such an act of rebellion and reclamation of yourself and your agency and your sovereignty.
That was pure power. And thank you for giving us six, because that's what your heart was telling you to do. And just what you said about women of color, you know, and I'll just add Black women. I say often, I don't know anybody who works harder than a Black woman, right? And I'm not saying that women, there's a lot of women in general. There's a lot of my Indigenous sisters, my Latinx sisters. And there's something from a historical standpoint and just the ways in which we have to show up for families and our faith, and we're in front of movements and like, so I love that. I love that invitation for all of us, but specifically from an intersectional lens, if we have these identities, honoring that the story of womanhood and the struggles are not the same, right? And that for some of us, depending on our identities and what those identities mean for our lived experience, we may need to amplify these practices, right? And sometimes we have to amplify because it's seasonal and like we're in a harvest season. Sometimes we have to amplify simply because of the lived experience of being in a Black body or, you know, being in a trans body or whatever that might be. And so, you know, I really, really appreciate you leaning into that and that invitation for all of us, and more specifically people that have certain identities that live with greater nuanced challenges in part because of their identities and what comes along with those. So thank you for that.
Yeah, of course.
So studying ancient wisdom practice such as Tantra and Hatha Yoga have opened the door for you to live an abundant life on top of meditation. And we've talked about that in fairly detail. So, you know, besides what we've already explored, how do you feel these practices have created a pathway to abundance for you?
Yeah. I mean, such a juicy question. You're just all your questions. Yes, 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 yes. Let's go away together for a weekend.
I'd love that. Sign me up.
Yes, same. But I, the word to sum it up, you actually used in early on in our chat, which is alchemy. And this ability to alchemize our experiences is, in a nutshell, what I think these amazing wisdom traditions can offer us. Because when we can alchemize things, again, it gives us a sense of agency, it's self-empowering, it builds self-trust, it lets us tune into our inner guidance, and it helps us create a sense of spaciousness in our lives and in our bodies, because we're not sort of like stuck with what is, right? So when I say alchemy, I mean turning the raw stuff of life into gold, like even the hard things, being able to transform it and not have to like sit with it, right? So this is why there's so many in the tradition that I study, the use of fire, imagery of fire and sunlight, and also moonlight, which is reflecting the sun, right? Like there's a lot of use of fire because it is this transformational element, our ability to digest our experiences, right? You look around the world, there's a lot of people who haven't digested their experiences and they're like spiritually constipated, you know, carrying around a lot of like waste product instead of transforming it into something that's beautiful and useful and extracting the nourishment from it. So I think in terms of like creating abundance, I want to circle back to something that you said earlier too, which is just like, no one can do it. You can do it. Mm-hmm. Right. And so when you want to think about designing the life that you would like to live, and that means a lot of different things, right? But I think abundance is, when I think about abundance, I think about spaciousness. I think about, you know, freedom and health and well-being. And also joy, right? Room for joy in life. But all of the things happen or are possible for us, I think, when we have that ability to alchemize our experiences. And also just this piece about no one can do it, like you can do it. When you put that, when you're moving through the self-doubt and you're building trust with yourself and you're doing that sort of that dance with courage and curiosity, you get to the point where you're like, I'm going to put this out there because it's my version of it. And it's my interpretation of it. It's my embodied experience of it. And that becomes an offering to the world. And it's a tithing practice, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's this like this tradition in so many spiritual traditions of tithing, of like giving a piece of your income away. It's same with your sort of what you're creating in the world. It's like you said, to a degree, you got to give it away. You got to offer it, make it an offering, because no one else can do it the way that you can do it. I don't know that I like summed it up.
No, you did
very well, but
you did. And so much of what you said, it was lovely. And it just resonated with me. I just finished my first book called Me Too, A Therapist's Journey to Heal from Complex Trauma, Find Liberation and Joy. And, you know, when we talk about the process of alchemization and, you know, alchemizing those experiences that we've had, and some of us have had severe trauma, right? And it's going to take more work for those things to be alchemized, and sometimes more acute. And all of us have had trauma to some extent in our lives, right? But the meaning making, and even in the moments when it's like, bad things just happen, right? And I've learned not to say that everything is happening for us. I think that we can find the beauty in everything. I think that we can be lifted. I think our consciousness can be raised, all of that. And I think that sometimes bad things just happen, right? That we'll never be able to make sense of. And the best that we can do is to find the beauty, right? To feel what we need to feel and to honor that feeling and get back to those higher level emotions so that we can be in our optimal state and figure out what does this mean for the next step in our work, right? And we don't even have to have the clarity in the moment. We can just know that in time, as we do the inner work and the outer work in the physical world, that those revelations are going to come to us, right? In time. And there's divinity, right? There's divinity in all of it. So thank you for that. That was a beautiful, beautiful.
Oh, thank you. I would love to tack on it. You know, it will come to you. I think we need to take responsibility for our experience to the extent that we are able. And I think it's also important to have support in life to do things like that, especially when you're dealing with trauma, but also don't let your practices become another form of perfectionism, right? So this like constant fixing. I think it's important to remind ourselves that like, this isn't about becoming someone new. It's about becoming more of you. That's what we want. Yes. We want more of you, because there's nobody else like you. And all of the things that are holding you back aren't actually the essence of you. They're sort of things that have been layered on, lessons or beliefs or other people's ancestral things, right? That we get loaded up with. So this is a stripping away practice. It's not an adding to, right? The light is there. Your soul is shining bright, and it's really about stripping back those layers so that more of you can shine. And I just want to add, because I think it's important that we're not fixing ourselves up, right? This isn't a renovation project. It's actually like, just strip it back down to the foundation and let that shine.
I love that. Because so often we're missing the mark. Right? We're showing up for the class. We're checking things off our list. We're, you know, tackling our wellness as if it's something to be checked off a list versus the state of being, right? Versus I practice because I know, because I'm committed to becoming the highest version of myself. And I practice because I know that as I practice, I gain a great deal. I am healing myself every time I practice. And whether that be having a conversation like this or reading a book or meditating or getting on my yoga mat or, you know, grounding outside, there are countless, countless, countless ways, right? For us to just be in a state of self, which helps us to be in a state of universe, source, God, creator, whatever it is that is for us. So gosh, Caitlin, I can't believe that we've come to the end. I would love to keep talking to you. And I know for certain that however our paths are supposed to cross again, they will. But in the meantime, I know that you have a gift for our listeners. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So I think the gift that we organized for you and your community is it the morning ritual?
Yes, the morning ritual.
Awesome. So the morning ritual is something I created years ago, and it is like my most popular thing that you can kind of download on the interwebs. People love it. And so it's just a really simple menu of offerings of like ways you can carve out a morning ritual for yourself. So it has some suggestions. And again, remember, this is a menu for you to choose from. You can think of it as a buffet. You don't need to go and do all the things or tick all the boxes, right? So you could just pick like the gratitude practice or the breathing and the meditation. You can just pick and choose what suits you and your schedule, and you can do it in the time that works for you in your life at the moment. But yeah, it's a printable PDF. So you can either look at it on your screen, or you can print it out. And then it also comes with a day planner so that you can, have a week sort of planning consciously, writing down what you're grateful for, along with things that you have to accomplish. And I think it's helpful to frame gratitude as something, a practice that we show up and do every day, and writing it down obviously has a ton of benefits. And then also in my app, which is called Heavily Meditated, you can access some free guided meditations that if you'd like to try that along with the morning ritual. So there are, yeah, quite a few different categories of free meditations in that app. So please make use of that, because I really, everything I design, I want it to be a complete toolkit. So when I put a book out, they have companion practices that are free to use. And the same with this guide. So I don't want you to have to go around on YouTube for some shady meditation practice. we've all been there.
Not to mention one-stop shop, right? And we're going to make it super easy. So all the links will be available. And, you know, in the spirit, of course, of you bringing meditation to the masses, I'm not surprised that you were so generous in your giftings to this community. So thank you again for your partnership on the Global Abundance Summit, the just impactful work that you're doing in the world. I'm grateful for it and all the people that you're touching with your light. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I can't say that enough.
I mirror all of that back to you. Thank you for what you're doing. And thank you for inviting me into your community. It's real delight to talk with you.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes, absolutely. So y'all heard it here at the Global Abundance Summit. We know that you've been inspired. Make sure that you follow Caitlin. You're going to have all of her links to do that. Do you want to talk a little bit about how people can follow you, contact you? I know that we'll have all of that, but do you want to just say that on screen right now, Caitlin?
Sure. Yeah. So my website is CaitlinCady.com. It's C-A-D-Y like lady. And that's my handle on Instagram as well. The app is heavily meditated. The book is heavily meditated and also the Hope Dealer. And yeah, I would love to connect with you. So if this conversation resonated or if you have any questions about your practice, I'm really inviting you into my DMs. I love connecting with people. So yeah, please put your hand up and let's connect.
Oh my gosh. So another freebie, y'all. I mean, she doesn't stop in terms of accessibility. And so thank you again. It's women like you that I feel just so aligned with and grateful for that. Although our paths are very individualized, we're on that pathway, right? So again, y'all heard it here at the Global Abundance Summit. Until next time, beauties. Ashe.